listening to The Complete Counselor, the podcast exploring how lawyers can have fulfilling law practices and lives filled with meaning and enjoyment, so you too can be a complete counselor. Hi, everybody. I'm Gordon Firemark.
And I'm Michael Priwis.
And we're back with another Complete Counselor podcast episode about, well, this time we're going to be talking about being organized, which is an interesting subject for me this week anyway, because I'm not feeling very organized. But Mike and I have got some thoughts on the subject, and let's just jump right in.
Well, first of all, I have to say that this is perfect, because I think most people think that there are organized people and then there aren't organized people. And I happen to not be the most well-organized person, I would say, in my family, in my circle of friends. But the fact is that you can develop skills in becoming more organized. And I think when you are starting out, just developing those skills and forming the certain habits, and we'll talk about this, but forming certain habits or rituals to get yourself in as organized a fashion as possible, I think it actually will make people feel good to know that we're not necessarily the most organized people in the world, and you still can be successful.
Yeah, you know, I think that organized is an interesting term also, because it can mean different things. You know, it's one thing to have your paperwork organized and have a file that's, you know, in the right chronological sequence of documents, and you can find what you're looking for when you go looking. And I think that's the kind of organized most of us think about generally when we're talking about being an organized person. But it's also about having your mental organization and being focused and deliberate about things, and being able to sort out the distractions and push them aside so you can get things done when they need to be done and so on. And when I joked that I'm not feeling so organized, I've been distracted. I'm scattered right now. And it's the holiday season, and I think a lot of people are distracted and scattered feeling right now. But you know, ultimately we get the job done, and that's what matters. And having good systems and practices and strategies for getting organized, staying organized, and then getting organized when you lose your organizational focus are really important. So let's jump in and talk about some important lessons about being organized when you're starting a business, starting a practice.
Well, I think ultimately creating some sort of mission statement and understanding what it is about your particular practice that has to have certain priorities is very important. And what I mean by that is, I came from a litigation background, and my new practice was transactional. And the priorities of a litigation firm are very different than those of a transactional firm. And what's that? Absolutely. And ultimately, I think the nature of what a support staff does with litigation is very different, vastly different than that for transactional. And knowing what those priorities are and figuring out what the tools and the resources are related to that is very important. But you really need to know what it is you want out of your firm, and really understand your own priorities vis-a-vis your firm before setting out to do almost anything else.
So having a target that you're focused on. I was talking about this just the other day about, you know, you want to have the objective ahead of you. And that way, knowing where you're going, if you do get blown off course, you can get back on track and continue. If you don't have that target clear in your mind and your vision, if you don't have that mission statement, then you're going to go wherever the wind blows you. And that's not a recipe for swift progress generally.
Yes. And I think one of the great things about this approach is that if you can identify what it is that matters most to you, and where things can fall by the wayside, you can actually incorporate this into your engagement letter, your retainer agreement with your client. So you already establish for yourself and for the client certain expectations that you need to live by.
Yeah, creating that alignment between your expectations and the client's, and frankly, setting out the deliverables of your work that you're going to do with that client.
Yes. So, for instance, for me, one of the ways that I had it written into my retainer agreement and it aligns with my priorities is I have a virtually paperless office, which I had a series of steps. If this is a high priority for me, which it was, I had to investigate. I read a number of articles and books on going paperless. I then availed myself of the New York State Bar app, which ethics app, where there were ethics opinions, so I could really get an understanding of what the ethical implications were. And I made it very clear that we try to be, we're not totally paperless, and it doesn't say we're totally paperless, but we strive to have as much of a virtually paperless office as possible.
So you're setting the expectation with the clients that if they want to have physical hard copies of documents, it's going to be incumbent upon them to retain them, that you're going to keep yours digitally. And so you're going to forward the originals to them when there's an original signed contract or something like that.
Exactly.
And it's their responsibility to keep it. That's among the kinds of ethical document retention policy sharing that you're talking about.
Exactly. And so what I actually do is in the retainer agreement, it's in bold and underlined. We will be sending you originals. We do not hold on to originals, and we scan them in and we make reasonable efforts to prevent any sort of destruction of the digital versions. We will send it to you. Please keep it in a fireproof box. Or fireproof environment, waterproof, weatherproof, you name it. And and there's an actual acknowledgement within the retainer agreement itself that the client understands this.
And in fact, what we're doing is essentially advising the client on document retention and evidence preservation and those kinds of issues as well when we're sharing with them our policies so that they understand what their legal obligations are. It's good news that actually we're living in a digital age, so people are sort of accustomed to having things in digital form. And as we know from law school, the best evidence rule means that if the original hard copy document is destroyed, but you have a scan, that will be admissible as evidence.
Right. And to give you an idea, this has practical application. First of all, I was at a law firm beforehand where we kept all of our folders, even active folders, in the basement. And I remember one time when raw sewage was coming up in the basement and we were rescuing files. So when I was, I was standing there, I swore that I would never do that again, standing in my dress shoes. But it's an important element. You have to think about all the things that arise when you make a decision like that. And so for me, I do scan it in. I send it to them. I have a strict process. And one of the things that is now incumbent on me is that I have to be organized on the digital level. And I have to know that about myself, that that's a high priority because I have chosen to go paperless.
Well, so let's talk about back to just being organized generally and how you've implemented that in this paperless process. So, I presume you've developed a filing system so that the documents are easy to find and retrieve when you need them, and that there's a logical structure to it so that if somebody else needs to go dig into it at some point, they will be able to figure it out and find them. Did you do a lot of research into what to do, or was it sort of intuitive?
I did do a lot of research, and I also, again, thought about how I know me and know what I'm good with and what I'm not. And this also stems back to other law firms I've worked in, which is, I think this also goes to our next point, which is knowing the technology that was out there and knowing how important, to me at least, integrating different technologies is. So for instance, I had worked heavily in Time Matters, which is a LexisNexis company. But I actually hated working in Time Matters. And I also had, I believe I had worked in the Thomson Reuters realm as well. But ultimately, I came to the conclusion, even when I was working at my old firms, that Google Apps for Business, and that was called G Suite, but Google Apps for Business worked best for me. And the reason is because it worked with my calendar, it worked with my spreadsheets and documents, and it also worked with my contacts pretty seamlessly. And ultimately for me, I like as little friction as possible. And I don't find when you have different software that integrates with a different company's software, I find it to be actually very disruptive. And I often find myself, and I know a lot of people do this, find myself just not using it. So I'll give you an example. Trello, which is a very popular project management software, which I know a lot of companies use, and I think it's a wonderful, and it integrates with G Suite. But ultimately, I used it a lot in the beginning for the launch of the law firm, but ultimately stopped using it for my actual law firm itself, because it was outside the G Suite world. And ultimately I decided to put project management in my Google Calendar itself. That being said, with my document, so launching my documents and Google Docs, I created a very specific system. And one of them was having a folder called clients, and each folder had a separate one for each, started with each person's last name. But with each document, I make it a point of starting with the year first, underscore, and then the month with the zero, and then underscore with the date, because that actually puts it into date order.
Mm-hmm. So you've got organized by client, then matter, and then chronologically within that matter by documents by date. So
exactly.
Yeah, and then I presume you use some descriptive naming of the document itself after that date.
Yes.
That's the same system that I have been using, and it really follows from the paper system that I grew up on in working in a law firm before digital. And right. We had, you know, the file basket or the Redweld would be the client's file, and then there would be matters divided up in folders within that and subfolders for certain categories of documents, but then within each file, each paper file, you would keep it in reverse chronological order. So the newest document was at the top.
Yes. And in fact, yes, I consider this to be Redwells, which is what I was dealing with. And ultimately, I found using Redwells infuriating, because people would put things outside the Redwell. The more people you have on board, the less likely it is that you're going to all be on the same page. And so having a virtual Redwell where you really, you know, you do have to do that once and then you're set.
So another thing is, if you're not the only person using the system, it's also important to document the system so that anybody who goes in, when they start, they are reading a document that tells them, here's what you do. And anybody who needs to get in and retrieve something can look and say, oh, okay, this makes perfect sense now that I understand the system, so that you're providing the training for the next person to have to work inside that organizational structure.
Right. And so that leads us into the question of apps for small business owners, for law firms. I find, like I said, I find that I get almost everything out of my Google experience. I know a lot of people have different preferences, but ultimately I have integrated my Google experience with my phone, my tablet, and my computer. And I want to, for me, it's important to have a hard drive that is backed up. So to give you an idea, I do also back up my hard drive with something called Carbonite, which is another wonderful backup. But I have a lot of redundancies in place, but that is ultimately the way I organize. I organize through the file system. Ultimately, I can't think of any other, now that I don't use Trello anymore, I don't really have other organizational apps or programs. Do you?
So I haven't drank the Google Kool-Aid quite to the extent that you have. I prefer, I'm on a Mac for my main computing, and I use an iPhone and an iPad as my mobile devices. And so I have chosen to use only apps that have functionality across those three platforms natively. So I'm using and the exception to that is the file system. I'm not using Apple's iCloud filing for that, right? Because you pay for storage and it gets expensive fast as you get to be large file storage. So I do have an online file storage solution where I can access them from all three of those devices. So any document I need is at my fingertips, and I can access it over the web from another machine as well. But I use the native word processor on Mac called Pages, which allows me to export to Word docs and PDFs and those kinds of things. And I use the calendar on the Mac integrated with the Google Calendar. So the Google Calendar is my main calendar, but I'm using the local applications to access it from my device.
And you use OmniFocus as well.
And right? I use OmniFocus as a task management. It's not really a project management. It works as project management, but it's really my to-do list. And it keeps track of my deadlines and my tasks that need to get done on a given day. And I find that provides good reminders, and it's a good system for me. It's not for everybody. It's a little heavier of a program than, you know, just a flat to-do list program, for example. But to my way of thinking, it keeps me focused and allows me to stay on top of the things that are highest priority, and also to move things around as priorities change. So so I am able to, and all of those have the applications are available on the phone and the tablet as well as the computer. So pretty much anywhere I am, I'm able to get to my work and get things done as needed.
Now, one of the things that I do want to emphasize, because I can speak to this based on the fact that there was a Good Wife episode about a law firm having experiences, and I know that I know of other law firms that have gone through this. If you have an IT professional, which a lot of people think they need or want, you have to understand that your security and your organization and your computer stuff is all as good as your IT firm's security itself. And this was an episode in The Good Wife, but I know this happens to other law firms, where the concept of ransomware is very, very real. And so one of the reasons I am such a big proponent of Gmail and G Suite and is because they've got a really nice track record. And I know Apple does too. Apple is well known for its security. And before that, BlackBerry was well known for its security. But the minute you're having your work backed up somewhere, if it's to somebody else's server as opposed to one of these big conglomerates like Amazon or Google or Apple, you are taking a risk of having your work disrupted. And I know that this is about organization, but if you are so reliant on your digital files and your digital work that you can be shut down should something, an event like this happen, you've got to seriously rethink about what you can do in the event of something catastrophic, like a power outage. Or for me, I know that I've got my work in multiple places where I know I can rescue it if, God forbid, something terrible happens.
Yeah, and the system that I use, because it's accessible to all of my devices. And it is, by the way, there is a copy of the documents on the local computer, and that does get backed up separately as well. So I have at least three, maybe four copies of any client document that I need to work on. Those are pretty well encrypted and protected in most instances. So, it is important that we consider not just ease of use, but also that it's safe.
Yes. And I think this leads in very well to our next point, which is worst case scenarios. Really thinking about how a lack of organization can hurt you. And if there are certain areas where not being organized isn't going to affect your business much, well, maybe that becomes a lower priority. But understanding the places where a lack of organization can really affect you, I think it's necessary. It's absolutely necessary for you to dream those worst case scenarios and then come up with the solutions by in a very concerted effort before you get started doing almost anything else, creating a system for dealing with if then statements.
let's just take a minute to talk about some of the, the research and the record is pretty clear on the kinds of errors that make trouble for attorneys. You know, one is missing deadlines. You know, another is failure to communicate with our clients. And those are two big ones. And so having an organizational approach to both of those things, certainly deadlines, calendars, having reminders and ticklers set up to remind you that something's coming up in a week or those kinds of things, you got to figure out a system that works and makes sense for you. But it can be very simple. It could be very complex depending on how you want to operate. On the phone calls or the communications thing, it's the same. Again, you want to have a methodology that you use every single time. If you choose to communicate with a client every time you generate a document, if you're a litigator, for example, hey, we've just prepared the answers to the interrogatories. It should be a pro forma practice that you're going to send the copy to the client as well as to opposing counsel. Anytime you receive a document in, you're going to, so you should have a process and a checklist that you go, maybe it's just a mental checklist, but ideally it's something that anybody in your firm can see, okay, this document came in, here's what needs to happen next, and sending it to the client. Phone calls, when somebody leaves you a message, you reply to that message within a reasonable amount of time, and you need to develop a system to make sure nothing slips through the cracks. That may just be, those message slips that you buy at the office supply store, and you, whether you keep it for yourself or someone provides you with written messages. Maybe it's some kind of a more complex system. Same with email. Email shouldn't get just deleted or archived until it's been dealt with in whatever the next step is. And I think that's really the important thing, is to have that next step mentality. So it's not just take it in and see what it says, but also, okay, what's the next thing I need to do because of this, and then put that item on a to-do list or a calendar or whatever, or pick up the phone and call the person, whatever the next step is, so that you're always moving the ball down the field.
Yes, and I think this leads us into our next point very well, which is creating rituals, creating structures in our mind, in our practice, creating habits that ultimately are routinized. They become part of our everyday. We know that we can expect, no matter how different our day goes tomorrow, it will have at least this element that is the same as yesterday and today. And I think that's very important, because we keep on getting back to the idea of systems. They don't have to be complex systems, but they do have to have a certain logic to them. If anything goes wrong, for whatever reason, you can say, this is what I would have done under this circumstance. And I know that when I used to depose an adversary, one of the answers I would always get from a good witness was, I don't remember exactly, but I do remember what I would do in this type of scenario. And then, of course, my question would be, to ask it. Now, one of the things that is interesting about the whole concept of depositions is that I noticed a lot of attorneys had different approaches to depositions. For me, I always typed out every single question. Yes. And now that sounds like a lot, but remember, I saved it. So all I had to do was cut and paste it, and I would read my questions. And I know that a lot of attorneys wouldn't do that because that would take away from the spontaneity and lack of listening. But for me, I would actually type out each question and leave space. So I could ask a question that allowed me to listen, but then I could always go back to those printed out questions. And I think, you know, if you write everything down, if you create these habits and have it written, these habits written down, these rituals written down, you can go back to them in whatever you do, whether it's transactional or it's the deposition process, or it's the way you approach your trial questioning. I understand the desire to have spontaneity and creativity, but even within a structure, you can achieve that spontaneity and creativity.
So, you know, one of the things that I learned to do early on in my practice was along these lines of developing routines, was that to have checklists. And you and I were talking about the book, The Checklist Manifesto, which I think is highly recommended reading in this area of being organized. And really, that's about more about quality control than just being organized, but they go together. Right? Having a good organizational structure means that quality doesn't suffer, that things get done the same way each time, and the management of things is handled. So having checklists. So in my practice, and I regret to say I've fallen away from it a little bit, but I have a file opening checklist, and that checklist actually asks me the question, okay, this is a new file, what kind of file is it? Are we forming a corporation for somebody? Are we registering a trademark or doing an option contract or whatever? And that leads me to another checklist, that is the issue spotting checklist for that particular task. I have a corporation formation checklist that has about 15 or 16 steps in the process of forming a corporation or an LLC for a client. And each of those steps is outlined, and there's a document in I actually have a forms file that is organized where the file name is the number that corresponds to the number of the item on my checklist. So articles of incorporation is document number one, and prepare document number one, prepare document number two, go through the, you know, file it with such and such a place. Here's the address. Here's the amount of the check that needs to be sent with the filing, all of that stuff on a checklist. So there is no mistaking and no forgetting. Oh yeah, I need to enclose a check, and here's I need to mail this to this office or whatever. And likewise for trademarks, likewise for copyright registrations. Some kinds of deals, it's a little harder to get everything down there, and we do have to rely on ourselves as attorneys to be the critical thinkers and spot issues and those kinds of things. But even then, having the big items on the list and being able to check them off before you move on to the next file or document is very helpful, and it's very freeing to know that you've hit all the key points. And yeah, and working from that checklist, it's not unusual for me to see, oh, you know, there's another item that I should have put in here between number 7 and number 8. And so sure enough, that then becomes a to-do item, is to update that checklist.
Yes, it's good that we're talking about the Checklist Manifesto, because this is a book that's been widely praised and widely used. But it comes from a surgeon. And it talks about pilots and how they do checklists, but a lot of it was about, like you said, quality control. Interestingly enough, I became first aware of this book when I was doing a lot of med-mal plaintiff's work. And I would ask a hospital administrator, let's say, if they had checklists, because this book pointed out that medical error was severely cut down when hospitals enacted checklists, and I found that to be true, and I loved asking that question. I think, though, now that I'm on the transactional side, it really comes into play for the very purpose of knowing what isn't in a contract. And so if you can go down your checklist of clauses that you expect to see in a given contract, and you know, and you're reviewing somebody else's work, well, you know that this is what was missing and this is what you forgot about. And ultimately, this leads me to the conversation we were having before, which is also in the Checklist Manifesto, about David Lee Roth and his, and how he, the legend has it that he would ask for the brown M&Ms to be taken out of bowls of M&Ms. And, you know, and it was publicized as it just being the excess of the rock star life. But he has a wonderful explanation of it, in that it was a rider within a giant contract that allowed him to understand whether a venue was following the requirements of, you know, very dangerous situations related to lights and pyrotechnics and everything else. So you had a really interesting response to that.
Well, yeah. So it was Van Halen, as well as David Lee Roth, who was the lead singer of the group. And the brown M&Ms were their canary in the coal mine. If they saw brown M&Ms in the bowl backstage in the dressing room, they knew that somebody hadn't been attending to all the details of that technical rider. I first became aware of this when, as a teenager, I was a roadie, and I was assigned the task of picking the brown M&Ms out of a bowl of M&Ms. And it was about a 10-pound bowl of M&Ms. It was a lot of M&Ms. And, you know, you can imagine this 18-year-old kid with filthy hands and dirty fingernails picking the brown M&Ms out of the bowl that the talent was going to be eating out of later. But that was when I first became aware of it. And at the time, that was my understanding, was that it was about the excesses of the, you know, throwing their power as rock stars around. But in fact, later it became clear that this was that canary in a coal mine, that identifier that someone wasn't paying attention to the details, and maybe we better have a closer look at the electrical setups and how the equipment was taken care of and how the stage was constructed, and had they put a bolt everywhere they needed to put a bolt to make sure the stage didn't collapse, all those kinds of things. And I was very clever. It was actually the lawyers that came up with that approach, turns out.
Yeah, now what's interesting about that, one of the things that doesn't get mentioned very much, but really should, is the fact that it wasn't just a demand for the removal of those brown M&Ms, but the consequences were dire. The promoter would have to pay the full amount to the band for, I can't remember, but
and basically it was the road manager's discretion whether the show went on or not.
Right. And so ultimately, creating consequences for yourself for violating systems and habits is, and your checklist, probably is a good idea. Really recognizing, and for other people, for the people, I mean, you conceivably, you can have this in, if you're employing somebody and creating consequences, you can be fired for violating XYZ. And I think that's important.
One of the dangers of making something a habit or routine and having these checklists, but then they become so familiar, is that you ignore the checklist and you go from memory. And that is a recipe for disaster, because there's always something that gets overlooked, and oh, it doesn't matter, or oh, it's never mattered before, and this is the time when it does. So, yes. So it's important also to build in some consequence for not following the checklist, not staying with the organizational system.
Yes. And look, I think it's a struggle for me. It's probably a struggle for you. It's great to talk about. It's very easy to break good habits. It's very easy to develop bad ones. I've battled with the success of a number of these things. Luckily, I haven't had really bad consequences, but I have been able to get back to that organizational structure. And it's good to, I think if I were to prioritize anything, and this leads into the next point, it's to have something written down. When you have something written down, And for a law firm, even considering something like a business plan, a manifesto for yourself, not just checklists, but, you know, something to remind you, I've mentioned this before, I have taped next to my monitor, I am a mentor and a resource for artists and entrepreneurs. That is my mission statement. I have it in front of me every time I look at my computer to always remind myself. I also happen to have my attorney number and ID also taped next to it, so I know what, you know, when I need it available for, you know, whatever, because I and for instance, and you know, having certain numbers, having right in front of your computer screen, phone numbers, whatever it is it takes to do the things repetitively and yet always be reminded. I think it's really important to have it written down.
Cheat sheets.
Yes. Cheat sheets. That's right.
Yeah. You know, I have in front of me, when I do my email marketing, I do an email newsletter, a list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 items that every email must contain. So when I'm writing that personal note that goes into my email newsletter, or when I'm including a blog post that I've written, I make sure that I'm addressing it in a certain way so that it lands and hits home most effectively. And that's, we need to do this for everything we do in our practices. So I think that a great tip is, in terms of getting organized, is to take a step back and take a look at what you do in your work. Maybe even just tracking for a few days everything that goes on in your life, and identifying the things that are the same every, that need to be the same every day, and creating those routines and documenting them. And the process of documenting them also will help you refine them.
Absolutely. I heard a great quote, and I'm going to butcher it, but it was by Abraham Lincoln. And it was something along the lines of, if you give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'm going to spend 4 of them sharpening the axe. Right, something like that. I think it's a great quote because I think it's getting prepared to start is important, is so important, so much more important than starting itself. Because if you can figure out exactly what it takes to sharpen that axe and then spend your time doing that, when it comes time for launch, yes, things will not go your way and you will have to adapt. But if you spend your time really focusing on what will go right if you do X, Y, Z, and creating the systems and writing them down and implementing these organizational structures and habits, when it comes time to start, I think it's sustaining that becomes a lot easier.
You're talking about preparation. Absolutely. It's the most important part of a task is preparing, so that when it comes time to do the task, you know the goal that we've talked about, and you know the steps that you're going to take to accomplish the goal. And, yeah, and you have a roadmap. And yeah, sometimes there's a detour, but you start with a map rather than a vague idea.
Yes. And I also think, and I think this is important, and I think for the people who are starting out without ever having been in a law firm, they're at a disadvantage. But if you've been in a law firm or several law firms, you probably have identified what worked and what did not work. And knowing what didn't work in other law firms or in other businesses, and writing down what you do not want to do, I think that's also very important.
We're going to be getting into systems a little more. We're going to actually be getting into the specific systems that every law practice will need. For example, you know, a client acquisition system and a client retention system, as well as a system for serving those clients and managing the finances of the firm, all those kinds of things. And as you develop a system for each of these, you start to have that roadmap. You start to have that, frankly, a very liberating feeling of knowing that things are getting done the right way. And that enables you to delegate. And delegation allows you to grow by not having to be on top of every little detail in your practice. You can trust that you created a good system, your people are handling that aspect of things very well, so you can focus on the bigger, higher level issues. And that's key for growth.
Yes, and I think you can expand on that because, and we can expound on that too, by recognizing that there are three different areas where you need to stay organized. It's not just a place, whether digital or real, but that is space. That's actually, that can be physical space, but also organizing time into certain categories, and also your mind into certain categories. You have to learn how to silo and set up boundaries and walls between different things that need to be organized. So for instance, I have a key hook for my keys. I know, I make it a habit, I put my key onto that key hook when I enter the door. I have my pens and pencils in a certain area. I've got my paper in another area. This is the way you do it on a physical realm. You, I know, are better at this than I am, but you organize your days and even certain hours into certain categories for, you know, clients on one day versus creative stuff on another day. Or for me, I do certain hours of the day where I'm reading, and other hours of the day when I'm writing or speaking to clients. But organizing that time is just as important as organizing your space, but also organizing your mind, where your level of focus, again, and your priorities, which are related to your focus, are concentrated in specific categories depending on the time and space.
Agreed. Yes. So just one final note on the subject is that organizational systems and checklists and all these structures, they don't have to be overly complex or elaborate. You know, the best solutions may actually be the simplest. It may just be three items on an index card. It doesn't have to be flashy or fancy, but just employ good common sense. And so with that, I think we're done. We're going to say adieu until next time. I'm Gordon Firemark.
And I'm Michael Prywas.
And we'll talk to you again very soon.